No New Year's Day to celebrate.
We are back on Downtown. It's 4:30 on your Wednesday afternoon. Rich Kimble here along with Bruce Pratt for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. And we're happy to welcome back to the program a frequent guest here on the Sports Lit segment. He's got a brand new book out that he co-wrote with Scott Pitoniak, and it's a wonderful historical novel called Invisible No More. We welcome back Rick Burton. Rick, thanks for being with us again.
Gentlemen, it's good to be back on the air with you.
Well, what a fascinating story this is. Bruce and I were talking earlier about the fact that we knew absolutely nothing about Wilmuth Sadat Singh. It's an incredible story, and the way you framed it by making it a work of fiction, I thought was a stroke of genius.
Well, thanks very much. I know Scott Pitoniak deserves a lot of that credit, but we love working together, and you know, we worked on a book covering a lot of Syracuse University's history for their 150th anniversary. We're both alums, and this was one of the feature stories in it. And, you know, we kind of agreed very early on, this was possibly the greatest athlete that no one's ever heard of. And then on top of that, he's a patriot who dies for a country that, you know, doesn't even give him equal footing. You know, he's a black man trying to fight in World War II, and you know, it's just an amazing story all the way around.
Well, yeah, to give it a little bit of a start, he was born in the District of Columbia in 1918. His dad became a pharmacist, but found that Tampa, Florida was a better place to do that than D.C. His father died when Wilmuth was very young, and his mother got a job at the Howard University Medical School, saw a very attractive to her young medical student, whose last name was Sadat Singh, and married him. And as a result, Wilmuth becomes the Hindu in many people's eyes. And though his whole life was said I'm African American, he used the word Negro at the time. People exploited that, which both benefited him and didn't benefit him. If you could talk a little bit about that part of his life, that'd be great.
Well, I think the term we use these days is, and I think they used it back then, is passing. He passed himself off as Indian, meaning the country of India, and it allowed him to be able to play sports at Syracuse because there were really a lot of what we're going to call gentlemen's agreements across really all of organized sport that blacks were not allowed to play. And yet if Wilmuth Sadat Singh was considered Indian, or as you said, a Hindu, which was the word that got used back in the day, then it was okay. And so he comes to Syracuse with the chance to play basketball for them. He's an amazing point guard. And while he's there on scholarship, or at least playing basketball on the varsity roster, he gets discovered as being someone who can throw a football. And, you know, American football at that time was really transforming itself from its rugby roots to the forward pass, which was going to completely change the game. You know, today we talk about Jalen Hurts or Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. And here's the guy whose shoulder those great quarterbacks today stand on, is he starts throwing the ball for Syracuse and, you know, becomes essentially the first black quarterback in any form of NCAA or professional football. It's just a fascinating story.
And I find just as fascinating that he was a zoology major who wanted to go to medical school. I mean, he was obviously a very bright kid. He hung around with people in Harlem that were known as giants in the Harlem Renaissance. He was not some kid from the backwoods who just had a lot of talent. And he worked very hard to fit in at Syracuse and seemed became a great friend of Marty Glickman, and he was just about to the pinnacle of his sports when they go down to College Park, Maryland, and he's not allowed to play.
Yeah, he gets outed by the black press, and the black community knew he was black, and as you said earlier, there were a lot of people taking advantage of the fact that if he was considered Indian or Hindu, then he could play, and he could be a powerful part of the Syracuse sports scene. But the University of Maryland read one of the noted black newspapers of the day. Sam Lacy, who was one of the great black journalists who did a lot for Jackie Robinson's career, Sam Lacy writes a story that says, hey, this guy is black, and he's proving every day that he's as good as all the white athletes. And Maryland, and this was, you know, a school below the Mason-Dixon line, says to Syracuse, if you play him, we will forfeit the game. And I think the veiled threat there is that, and you'll lose the payment that we were going to give you for playing this game. And so Syracuse, you know, really, unfortunately, sits Wilmuth Sadat Singh out for that game. Syracuse gets trounced. But there's this great backstory underneath it, which is that Marty Glickman, who got pulled out of the 1936 Berlin Summer Olympics because he was Jewish, the victim of anti-Semitism, has to, in that locker room, watch his friend and a great player be pulled from the game because he's black. And so all of these nuances really just kind of feather this unique story that, as you guys said at the top of the you know, this piece, no one knows about. And I think a big part of that is because Sadat Singh joined the Tuskegee Airmen and made the mistake of dying heroically for his country during World War II.
Well, and before he gets to Tuskegee, it's not like he graduates from college and he goes right there. He's trying to work. He's a cop. He's trying to save some money with the hope of going to medical school. And I think it's so extraordinary that in 1918, the Irish were told, you know, you fight with the British, you're going to get free. And African-American soldiers were told pretty much the same thing. You know, you fight, everything's going to be better later. Singh, it's not like he bought into that, but he seemed to understand that he had to be extraordinary just to be ordinary. And signing up for the Tuskegee Airmen and being one of the best was really a remarkable thing for a kid from the District of Columbia.
Yeah, you're so right. And I think that, you know, the way you just phrased it, you know, be extraordinary to be ordinary, to be just, you know, one of the gang, to be one of us. And it's horrible to think that that was the way it was in the 40s. And I think I could probably find a lot of people who think that that's still the case today. But Singh, you know, rose to every occasion. He would have been, a lot of people believe, you know, someone who could have been Obama-esque. You know, he would have been possibly a great politician or a great civic leader. He, you know, in a lot of ways, he's a civil rights leader before we're even using that phrase, because he's breaking a barrier by being a black man throwing the ball and essentially telling, you know, the other players on the field, this is what's going to happen next. You know, he is the decisive leader in that orange backfield. And then, you know, on his way to possibly becoming a doctor, you know, or someone very accomplished in a scholarly or career kind of fashion, he makes the difficult decision, although perhaps not hard for him, that he's going to go prove himself that he's capable of being a fighter pilot. And the military, the white military of the time, you know, was really, really hard on any of the black airmen who tried to fly in the Tuskegee Airmen. They were using, you know, hand-me-down planes, and the general belief was that blacks were not going to be good enough to fly planes. So you had to be the best of the best even to get your wings, and Wilmuth Sadat Singh was every bit of that.
One of the things that the book doesn't come out and say, because no one knows this for sure, but there's certainly plenty of evidence that he may have been given that bad plane on purpose by a racist commanding officer of the base who had been guilty of, shall we say, rather overt and tragic actions towards other African Americans. You couldn't go there and make that decision in the book, but how much did that cross your mind?
Oh, quite a bit. Quite a bit. I mean, there's every reason to believe. Sadat Singh is pretty famous by that point in the black community. You know, he's played with the Harlem Wrens. He's, you know, he'd been a childhood friend to Duke Ellington's son. He was friends with Cab Calloway. You know, he knew Joe Louis. These were celebrities in the black community who were somewhat resistantly, if that's a word, embraced embraced is the wrong word, you know, were accepted in the white community, and he gets to this Michigan base, which is where the Tuskegee Airmen flew out of after they finished up in Alabama. And I think his celebrity absolutely could have worked against him, and the fact that he had played at Syracuse and the base commander was really, you know, very much connected to the University of Michigan and Ford, the motor company. And so I think, you just have to imagine that it was incredibly possible. But as you say, we could not connect that line because there is, you know, no way to actually have that be proven.
We're talking with Rick Burton about the new book, Invisible No More. What did creating the character of the sports writer Brianna Shelton, what did that allow you and Scott to do?
Well, both Scott and I were sports writers. He's really pretty legendary in Rochester and covered a lot of the Buffalo Bills during their ascendant years, the four Super Bowls. And I started my career with the Syracuse Post-Standard. So we know those newsrooms, and they always say that authors should write what they know about. And, you know, we both, you know, knew situations like what we were writing about, creating a fictitious character in Brianna, who gets wind of the Wilma Sadat Singh story and develops it and brings it to life. But, you know, when I worked for the Syracuse Post-Standard, it was an all-white male staff, and that was 1980. And so even the integration of women, and particularly black women, into newsrooms and onto the sports desk, just incredibly rare. And so we really loved, I think, trying to flesh out that story of what would it be like for a pioneer kind of in a world that we knew, sport journalism, print sport journalism, to break through, and how would we design that she would get a story that had sports in it, but had, you know, World War II, and have it actually maybe play a role in what would happen in her career. I mean, I won't ruin it for readers who might go and find the book, but a lot of fun for us to create that character.
You also used Syracuse, the physical Syracuse University, so well. I've eaten pizza at the Varsity, and I've had beers at the Varsity. But I was thinking, as I was reading it, if someone didn't have the sense of the hill and how high it is and where he had to walk from every day from down in the ward, that was transcended so well into the story, that he was always climbing up, always looking to get somewhere. But he was looking up without being haughty. You know, and I thought that you really took the physical presence of Syracuse and made that a character in the book.
Well, thank you. You know, both from me and on behalf of Scott, I think that, you know, that fight to climb the hill or the fight to get your wings, you know, to reach the sky, it's a great metaphor. And I think a lot of people today, you know, are still fighting those challenges. We saw Wilma Sadat Singh's story as being something that's really evident today. He had to hide his race, if you can imagine it. But I think we're in an age right now where people are thoughtful about maybe their sexual preference or their country of origin or their religion and whether or not they want that to come out. And so I think what we found in Sadat Singh was every bit evident in what we would see in today's society.
I like that you got another Syracuse alum, Mike Tirico, to write a blurb for you as well.
Well, we've had the good fortune of knowing Mike for a lot of years, and he's probably now, I think, probably the greatest of the Syracuse sportscasters. I mean, certainly Klickman was the first, but Marv Albert and Bob Costas and Sean McDonough and Mike Tirico, there's really quite a legacy. Mm. You know, Ian Eagle, Beth Mowins, I could go on, and I'm missing 20 other names that have emerged over the years. Syracuse just appears to be really, really good at turning out famous sports broadcasters, which is funny enough why I chose to go to Syracuse. That was what I wanted to be, was a famous sports broadcaster. But as I like to say, I had a face for radio and a voice for newspapers.
We say that around here a lot, too. You know, the thing I did when I first saw the blurb for the book was I said, okay, who are the most famous African-American players at Syracuse to come to mind to me, and Ernie Davis and Floyd Little and Jim Brown and Donovan McNabb and Carmelo Anthony. And I'm thinking they all did incredible things, especially Jimmy Brown. But when you look at what Wilmuth did in a short period of time against those odds, I got to say that might be the greatest athlete Syracuse ever turned out.
You know, I like you saying that. I mean, obviously, I think the majority of people would say Jim Brown because they haven't heard of Sadat Singh. But, you know, we write about in the book, there's a football game against number two ranked Cornell, and they had been the defending national champions. They were number two that year. They come into Syracuse at Archbold Stadium, Old Archie, and Syracuse is really just hanging on in the game. And in the fourth quarter, Singh throws three fourth quarter touchdown passes to beat Cornell. And Grantland Rice is at the game really ostensibly to cover Cornell. And he then writes this really glowing column about Sadat Singh that goes national. And, you know, Grantland Rice was probably the most powerful and influential sports media journalist at the time. But Syracuse wins that game. And the great statistic from it that's interesting to me is they didn't achieve a single first down in the game. So they beat Cornell 19-17, no first downs, but three fourth-quarter touchdown passes. A pretty amazing story.
Yeah. Well, it is a remarkable story. I am so pleased to know it, and I become quite the proselytizer for this because I think that more people need to know the story because it's not just your regular rags-to-riches story. It's far deeper and bigger than that. And boy, the way you turned it into a novel – as a novelist, I got to tell you, I was more than impressed.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, and I'll make sure that Scott hears it. And we appreciate the proselytizing. And we think that the story itself has got feature film written all over it because there's just so many elements of it that we think would fit a modern storytelling where you can actually create even more dialogue and bring a story to life that would keep Wilmuth Sadat Singh from being invisible any longer.
Absolutely. And it's also written that a person who's in his late teens or her late teens can enjoy this book as much as me, who's gone over the 70 hill already. So I think that's also another really good thing to say about the book. It's very accessible and it's just fabulously interesting.
Well, thanks so much, guys. Appreciate you having me on the show, and we'll make sure to bring you anything new that we write in the future.
That sounds great. We'll give our best to Scott as well, and thanks again for being with us, Rick.
Thank you.
That's Rick Burton, the book written along with Scott Pitoniak, Invisible No More, a fascinating story. And obviously, if you love sports, it's a great story, but the story transcends sport.
Absolutely. I've told a bunch of people, I said, we're going to talk about it on Sports Lit 101, but you could talk about this on Lit 101 anywhere as a way to take a real figure who you don't have all the details about, fictionalize it through. They researched this for a quarter of a century between the two of them. So they didn't just throw this out one afternoon and then make it so vibrant that you feel like you're reading nonfiction.
Yeah.
And boy, I'll tell you, when you can do that like that, that's really good writing.
Absolutely. Invisible No More. Name of the book, Rick Burton, Scott Pitoniak. It's 4:48. We'll take a break here on a Wednesday.